one of those obtuse truisms in American democracy that the way you run for president is to first say you are not running. Hillary Clinton, not running, right? Jeb Bush, not running, right? Then you create a narrative something like, the American people signaled to me that this was an important moment, the country needs me, I'm being urged to run, pressure was intense, my family said they would support me, and so I have decided, blah, 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 exploratory committee, and then the campaign kicks off. Well, with more than 2 years until the 2016 presidential election, there are a lot of people who fit this bill. One of them is Dr. Ben Carson, a retired neurosurgeon from Johns Hopkins, who made a name for himself in his speech at the 2013 National Prayer Breakfast, you may remember, when he attacked the left for high taxes, political correctness, and the Affordable Care Act, with the president sitting just a few feet away. Dr. Carson elaborates on some of his ideas in that speech in his campaign manifesto new book, One Nation: What We Can All Do to Save America's Future. But to be clear, Dr. Ben Carson told us he's not running.
As you know, there are a lot of people who think that I should run for president. That was not in my bucket list of things to do. But what I'm finding all over the country are people who seem to be gravitating toward me because I'm talking a lot about things that make sense. One of the key things and one of the real points of the book One Nation is that we, the American people, are not each other's enemies. And yet, you know, we're being divided up into all kinds of groups by people who do a lot of manipulation. You know, there's wars on gender and age, race, income, you know, virtually anything that you can think of. And this is not how we became a great nation.
Part of that argument is the logic that was used by the Supreme Court in striking down the Defense of Marriage Act in the Supreme Court case on same-sex marriage. Would you seek to have a constitutional amendment to keep same-sex marriage from being legal in the United States if you were president?
If I were president, obviously I would uphold the laws of the land, whatever they are, regardless of my own personal beliefs.
So you support the legalization of same-sex marriage?
I support the law of the land. I always support the law of the land.
Right, but now, the law of the land gets approved by people who vote for or against laws.
Now, what I will say, as far as marriage is concerned, the definition of marriage has been between a man and a woman for not only centuries, but for millenniums. And the question really is, does anyone have the right to change the definition? And if they do have the right to change the definition, are they the only ones with the right to change the definition? Or does someone else get to change the definition down the road because they changed the definition? And what we really need to start looking at are bigger picture issues. Do any two human beings, adults, have the right to join themselves together in a legal relationship? Of course they do. And I think that is the real issue. Can they do that? Absolutely they can do that.
Why is it such a leap for them to call it marriage?
Because if we change it for one group, we have to keep changing it. If you can tell me that we change it this one time and we never change it again, I would like to hear your argument for that.
Well, you know, things change all the time. I mean, a lot of things happening millennia ago don't happen anymore, you know, human sacrifice. I mean, all kinds
so you
of things,
admit right? that it, if you change it, now you have to keep changing it, right?
Things change all the time.
So why go through all the grief of changing it when you can create another situation for them that solves the problem? Why is it that they have to change it for everybody else? You know, it's sort of like a new group of mathematicians comes along. They say 2 + 2 = 5. And the traditionalists say, no, it's 4. It's always been 4. And the new ones say, we insist that it's 5. And so the traditionalists say, okay, it can be 5 for you, but we're keeping it as 4. And the new ones say, no, it has to be 5 for you too. And if it's not 5 for you, then you're a mathophobe.
Well, I would say that your analogy that 2 + 2 = 5 suggests that homosexuality is unnatural in some way, and that's the kind of thing that got you in trouble before
when you
compared it to bestiality.
It suggests that it changes, and I did not compare it to bestiality. Never did I say it was the same as bestiality, and it's a little bit irritating to me that people grab things that you say and try to change the definition in order to stir up the very thing that I was talking about.
Well, you addressed in your book that you regretted making that comparison or that list, that statement.
I regret that people took it that way, but that obviously wasn't what I meant.
So 8 million people signed up for the Affordable Care Act. Done deal. Affordable Care Act is working. What would you say?
I would say my issue with the Affordable Care Act is not, you know, an inefficient system, a broken website, premiums that are going up, something that is unsustainable financially. Those are not my argument. My argument is that the most important thing that a person has is their health and their health care. And that should be in their hands, not in the hands of someone else. That is fundamentally oppositional to the whole concept of freedom.
Don't you think that people having insurance is likely to increase their likelihood of having good health?
I am an ardent supporter of health care for everybody, of universal health care. We have enough money to do that. We spend more than twice as much per capita as the next closest nation. So it's not a matter of us not having the will or committing the resources. It's a matter of doing it in an incredibly inefficient way. And what we need to be addressing is how that's done. The Affordable Care Act had many things in it that I agree with and that I think many people on the Republican side would agree with. And I remember talking to a high administration official, and I said, why don't we start with those things that we all agree with? Because I can't imagine anybody who doesn't want to do this and reform health care. I say, so let's start with the things we all agree with, make that the foundation, and then together build something that works for everybody. I said, if you do it the other way, you jam this thing through with one party with total opposition from the other side, all you're going to do is create animosity, and that's going to have a lot of consequences. And he said, you're probably right, but this is Washington and this is politics. Well, this is the very problem that we're having in this nation. We take these major issues that affect everybody and we throw them into the political arena. They don't need to be in the political arena. We're smart people. We have intellect. And if we really start talking to each other and not getting in our corners and throwing hand grenades at each other, we can solve all of these problems quite effectively.
You just said you supported universal health care. How would you implement universal health care?
Well, thank you for asking that question. First of all, you have to understand the principles. And the key principle is putting people's health care back in their own hands where they have real responsibility. Because when you do that, people are going to start selecting things based on efficiency, based on price, which is going to bring the whole healthcare system into the free market economy. That's what's going to control.
So you want to get rid of Medicaid?
I didn't say I want to get rid
or
of
Medicare.
Medicaid. Didn't say that. But what I want to do is I want to emphasize health savings accounts. Because with health savings account, you and the practitioner decide what you're going to do. You sprain your ankle and you think you need an x-ray, that's coming out of your HSA.
Does the federal government mandate the amount of money you have to have in your federal health savings account? And do they mandate what you spend that on?
I think there should be a suggested amount of money that is in there to make it viable, to make it work. I think the funding of it will vary. You know, in some cases it'll be employers. In some cases, it might be the federal government, certainly in people who are indigent. But when you look at the amount of money that we're spending already, this is something that's easily doable.
How do you reconcile the idea that the federal government would mandate any amount of money or any sort of directed spending with conservative principles that say it's your money, you should keep it and do whatever you want? If you don't want to get health care insurance or don't want to spend it on health care, you don't have to.
It doesn't keep you from allocating money for people. And you have to allow it only to be spent for legitimate health care purposes.
So that's a mandate. You would support that federal mandate.
I'm not willing to call it a mandate. I'm calling it common sense and the ability to take care of all of our citizens, whether they're responsible or not.
What would you do as an incentive for people who don't use common sense? Would you levy a fine, a tax?
No.
What would disincentive would there be?
No. People who decide that they're not going to use common sense should fall where people who don't use common sense fall, and that is on the mercy of people who do use common sense. So if they come and they say, please help me, I've been stupid, hopefully people are going to help them.
Well, but that happens every single day when diabetics show up at the emergency room, and that's the system we have now.
And we take care of them.
But that system is not working. That's the one you want to reform.
But we can make improvements on it by doing these logical things. You know, in the book, One Nation, there is an extensive area that talks about logical solutions. You know, they're interconnected. The whole concept of tort reform. Think about how important that is. And defensive medicine and how much that costs. When we start doing these things in a logical fashion, what a difference it makes. And you remember when Texas, which was having a terrible malpractice crisis, put into place tort reform. And there were all the predictions, you know, the poor won't be able to get any care. The whole thing's going to just go to Hades. I mean, that was just craziness. Look what happened instead. We have twice as many doctors there now. The number of malpractice cases has dwindled significantly. The whole system has improved very significantly. You know, I don't understand why we're not capable of looking at things that work and then emulating those things and looking at things that don't work and discarding those things. You know, that's the empirical method. We don't seem to use that. Instead, we like to use the ideological method. And you become ideologues, and you do something, and it doesn't work. And you say, but it's my ideal, and it's got to work, so let's just double down on it. And then it still doesn't work, and you just double down on it again. That doesn't make any sense. And this, what I'm talking about is not Republican or Democrat. I'm talking about what is going to help Americans, what is going to help our nation.
No one would argue that Barack Obama being the first African-American president is a historical milestone in the narrative of the USA. What do you think would be the historical significance of, if you were in the White House, being the second African-American president?
As far as I'm concerned, it has no historical significance. And I am very anxious for the time when people don't consider a person's color. You know, I was asked once when I was doing an NPR interview, Dr. Carson, you don't talk about race very often. Why is that? And I said, it's because I'm a neurosurgeon. And she looked at me quizzically, and I said, you see, when I take someone to the operating room and I cut that scalp and peel it back and take off that bone flap and open the dura, I'm operating on the thing that makes that person the person who they are. The skin doesn't make them who they are. And, you know, we just need to stop the whole thing about a person's color. You know, one of the things that irritates me more than anything are all of those people who say, but you're black, therefore you have to think this way. Black people have the ability to think independently also, or at least they should.
Are you familiar with these comedians, Key and Peele?
No.
You know, they do a routine that pokes fun at black Republicans, that they're a very small group, and they are very defensive about diversity within their group, and that they all think very, very independently. And it's something of a running joke, at least it seems, among mainstream African-Americans that there is this small group of very defensive Republican African-Americans. What do you think about that idea? And what do you think about the idea of the African-American message being conservative?
I wonder if their ridicule extends to Booker T. Washington, who was a Republican, and George Washington Carver, who was a Republican, and Frederick Douglass, who was a Republican, the father of Dr. Martin Luther King, who was a Republican, and the list goes on and on.
A very different GOP, though, declaring emancipation back in the 1860s.
Well, I mean, the Democratic Party is very different, too. I mean, take somebody like John Kennedy saying the things that he was saying, he would be considered a right-wing Republican. Now, they'd probably tar and feather him if he went to a Democrat convention talking about, that's not what your country can do for you, that's what you can do for your country. I mean, so, you know, the whole spectrum has shifted. I, as you see in the book, don't really emphasize so much Democrats and Republicans. I emphasize logic and people who are non-logical. And that's the way we're going to have to start thinking. Stop allowing ourselves to be manipulated. You know, we can do amazing things if we're willing to work together and stop all the manipulation.
Neurosurgeons really perform miracles with a scalpel. Why would you ever want to be president? That's going to make neurosurgery look like a cakewalk.
Well, I don't want to be president. Why would anybody want to be president? But considering the condition of our nation, if a large number of my fellow citizens felt that that was something that they really desired, and I would hope, you know, that I could make a difference in that capacity.
Ben Carson is a retired neurosurgeon and author of One Nation, What We Can All Do to Save America's Future. Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you very much.